Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk show. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you here. And I'm very happy to have back on the program once again, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension. Her area now includes Champaign, Ford, Iroquois, and Vermilion counties. She has been doing this program with us for quite a long time. She stops by here always on a Tuesday. We do it once a month. And this is a chance for people who are listening to call in with questions about things that grow in the home landscape. So it could be trees, shrubs, could be grass, could be flowers, could be things that you eat, could be things that are just there to look pretty. We could talk about houseplants as well. So if we can take a wide range of questions, and it can be a case where maybe you got a problem with the plant and you're not quite sure how to solve it. Maybe you're not even sure what the problem is. So if you can try to describe it to us, Sandy might be able to do a diagnosis. Or perhaps also you have a particular place in your yard that you're like to put something, and maybe you'd like to have some suggestions. That's kind of what we do here, and we'd be very happy to take as many calls as we can. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. You can also send us an email, will-talk@illinois.edu. Thank you very much for being here.
Sure.
So we were just talking about here about the fact that we earlier in spring we had some really unusually warm weather, so everything got going and started going nuts. And then we did have a cold snap that bit some stuff. It certainly did in my yard. And you were talking about, you had, I think you said it was a ginkgo tree that you thought you were really concerned about it, and because it just didn't seem to be doing what you thought that it should.
Well, everything else had pretty much started to regrow. I noticed a lot of things, maybe they lost that, and I think you were talking about some of the plants that you had. Yeah. That new growth kind of got nipped back, and we're talking about mainly like trees and shrubs kinds of things, woody plants, got nipped back, but then it was showing growth beyond, you know, before yeah. that. So we mm-hmm. have a little bit of, you know, dead growth on the end, but then it was starting to resprout. And you typically think that's what plants would do. But my ginkgo here had been, what, like 3 weeks now, and it still hadn't done anything, and I was beginning to think the thing had died. I really did, which would have surprised me. But I noticed this morning it's finally starting to send it. So I guess the rule of thumb is don't give up, you know, until it's, if it's just sort of dead or really dead. You have to just wait and decide whether it's really dead or not. But it definitely, for the past two weeks, certainly has looked really dead. But.
Well, I know we definitely had a couple nights where it was pretty cold, and we have a kiwi that really got badly nipped. And but the plant is fine, but certainly on the tips of a lot of the vines, they just turn black and they just look terrible. So it's just a matter of, but that's, I think, just a cosmetic thing. You trim that stuff off. And I think actually, amazingly enough, I had some hosta that got bitten, and I was thinking that hosta could pretty much survive anything. But maybe it was just this particular spot where they were not very happy, but it didn't kill them, so.
Well, I think a lot of it is, well, there were a couple of things going on. We also had high winds. So I think part of that was high wind. I think on some of the plants, at least that I've noticed, that some of it was truly just because that succulent growth just will not tolerate wind very well. And so I think in some areas, it was probably wind damage as much as frost damage. And then the other thing I really kind of noticed was just the fact that for some plants, like my butterfly bush was a good example. I think we talked about this even last month, is, you know, my butterfly bush didn't even die to the ground. Typically, it would die to the ground and come back from the base, and that's fine, and it would be. But then it had not died to the ground because it's such a mild winter. And then now with this cold spell that we had a few weeks ago, now it has pretty much died to the ground. And now I get to trim it back, and it's sort of back the way it always is, where it does go ahead and come back from the base. So I think probably the biggest thing is people are going to have to notice they may have to do some sort of cosmetic kinds of things that you were mentioning just to make them look better, just to remove that growth that maybe that got killed back. But then they'll go ahead and do their thing, and they'll be just fine. So most healthy plants have that ability to leaf out again. Even though they lose that first set of leaves, they'll go ahead and leaf out again. Probably the saddest part is that, and certainly in some areas, we've seen a big problem with a lot of the fruit crops, depending on where it is. I know my cherries are gone. I had a beautiful cherry crop, and because of that cold spell, and because I think the other thing that added to this is because everything was at least 3 to 4 weeks ahead of schedule because of that March warm weather we had, that typically, you know, a cold spell in April wouldn't have been a big deal for some of these plants. But because they were a month early, they thought they were getting a cold spell in May instead of a cold spell in April. And it's a big difference depending on how far along the plant is. So I think that was those two things really added a lot to what was going on and the damage we saw. So people may be, unfortunately, maybe an issue where their fruit crops just did not do well. I saw damage on my strawberries. You'll see kind of a blackening on the berry. They should go ahead and produce, continue. Strawberries should certainly go ahead and produce more. But that first berry, that king berry, that really big one, may be either distorted, maybe not look that perfect, or it may not develop at all. So I think there's going to be some fruit issues. Certainly apples in some areas. People lost a lot of their apple crop as well. So we'll kind of have to see how that goes. But it was really tough on a lot of things.
Yeah. I just, on the other hand, there are some things that just seem to be doing spectacularly.
Right.
And
right.
I probably talked about this. We have a dogwood. Yeah. And there have never been as many flowers on that tree as this year. Never. It's just spectacular.
Yeah, isn't that great?
And I suppose that maybe has as much to do with the fact that it was relatively mild winter as anything, because the things that make the flowers, they get set really early. And if things are relatively mild, you don't lose those, then that's what makes your flowers. And never have seen that many flowers on the tree. It's just spectacular.
Yeah. I've had a lot of people comment about that on some of those spring flowering things, trees in particular, where they just look gorgeous this year. And because of that mild winter, we didn't have that there's always some semblance of, were you going to have some of the flower buds may die? Because all those plants that are blooming really early in the year that bloom before June 15th, you know, they have their flower buds through the winter time. So those flower buds have to go through a winter spell and still survive and still look good. So it's kind of a big issue.
All right. Sandy Mason is with us. We'll take your plant questions. 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free 800-222-9455. You also can send us an email, will-talk@illinois.edu. Here's a caller in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I have a question about redbud. This is something I heard, and I thought maybe you could verify. Redbuds have these, after they bud, they have these pods that they grow.
Mm-hmm.
I was told that those pods are edible, especially when they're very fresh. They're tasty. I've never heard that. I don't know anything about it, but I thought, well, you're the best person to check on that.
Well, certainly with redbuds, the flowers are edible, and they're in the bean family, the legume family. I've never heard of anybody trying to eat the pods. So that would be something. I would think it would be all right, but I'm not sure I know that. And then plus, I'm just thinking the way they look, they look really stringy to me. So I'm not sure what the quality would be.
Well, I tried one.
Oh, did you?
But it doesn't have much taste, but this, it's sort of not... It's sort of a little older than it should be.
Yeah.
And I didn't die from it or get sick.
Good to know.
But I was told that they're edible, especially when they're fresh. Now, I didn't know that the flowers are edible.
Yeah, the flowers are actually quite edible. They have this wonderful sort of green flavor to them, and they're really beautiful in a salad. And there's usually plenty of them. So that part I do know. So, but yeah, the pods, I'm just wondering, I'm just thinking it, you know, it might be something that to look into further, because they certainly produce lots of them. And I noticed this year there's lots of them.
Here, now I'm looking, so I did a search while we're sitting here and put in the question to my browser, can you eat red bud pods? And apparently the answer is yes, you can. Better earlier than later because they're more tender.
Yeah.
It says wait too long, they'll get tough and stringy and are no fun to eat. if you wait too long, the raw seed pods right from the tree have a somewhat tangy taste. It says a good snack food or addition to salad or stir fry. Remove the stem before eating or use it as I do, says this writer, to hold my snack while eating. Apparently. So they also, as this caution, I've never eaten a large quantity, so proceed with caution and see if they agree with you first. Remember, you can be allergic to a wild plant as easily as a common food plant. So I guess you're correct, or at least some people do eat them. Yeah.
And I've got lots of them, so maybe next year.
Well, the trees certainly, but
yeah,
we have them around our yard, and certainly they put out an awful lot of those pods.
Yes.
So very well.
Yes. Well, good
proceed
question.
With caution, though. I think and the other thing that it said in this particular article is that make sure that it is a red bud,
yeah,
and that it's not something else, because I'm sure you could possibly Eat something that would make you sick.
Yeah.
So there you have it. other questions, comments, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. And we will go back here and continue and talk next with someone in Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a group of about 15 yew trees arranged on the north and west perimeters of my lot. On the north perimeter, they are bound by a retaining wall. And some of these all of them are about 40 years old, I suspect. And the ones along the retaining wall are showing signs of wear and age and are beginning to peter out. Is there anything that I could do short of starting over that might revive these yews that are also bound by the retaining wall?
So what is it that they're doing that you think, are they like, getting thinner, or what is it that they're doing?
They're thin. The ones on the west side are nice and thick and healthy and multi-stemmed and so forth. The ones on the north wall are relatively thin. The vegetation is sparse. Mm-hmm. They're just bedraggled.
So when you say, so these are on top of the retaining wall?
These are adjacent to a retaining wall. There's a small elevation difference between the yards of the neighbor and our yard. And so the retaining wall is about 2 feet high to allow for the drop off to the neighbor's yard.
So they're on the low end.
They are on the yews are on the high end.
Oh, the yews are on the high end.
Yes.
Okay. Because what I was thinking was, because one of the things that, you know, yews generally don't have a whole lot of insect and disease problems. There's a few things, but not very often. But probably the biggest thing on why, and these can live, and I should say, these can live for a long time. We think of them as shrubs, but these guys actually can live for 50 years without too much issue. So it's not that they're necessarily at that age. Now, I realize you said they're 40, so, you know. But my point is, these certainly, they're not necessarily at the end of their life. So I'm wondering what's going on, and probably the biggest thing that they have issues with is wet areas. They hate wet feet. But it sounds like if this is on a higher end, I wouldn't think that would be the issue. Would this be wetter on this side for any reason?
There's no obvious ponding or anything that goes on in that part of the yard.
Right. Well, I would just kind of watch it and make sure that that's not an issue, because that certainly would make one set not do as well as another set, and just too much water, period. The other thing is what you might want to do is actually just, you know, you certainly could do some trimming on them and try to thicken them up. And sometimes just actually, you know, just making them a little bit shorter and kind of trimming them. Sometimes they'll go ahead and leaf out a little bit more, or they'll certainly look thicker. You certainly could try a fertilizer, like for something for acid-loving plants.
I use the fertilizer stakes for evergreens each year.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I use them only on my side of the trees, not on the neighbor's side. So I don't know whether they're getting ample nutrition. I should also have mentioned that the ones on the north side, that is the ones up against that retaining wall, are also underneath electrical lines, and so they have been topped.
Oh.
So that is another influence on their vitality.
But those are the ones that are actually looking better, correct?
Those are the ones that are looking bad.
Oh, those are the ones that are looking
bad. They're both up against the retaining wall and underneath the electrical lines.
Okay. I'm trying to visualize this.
Yeah.
So I would just really watch the watering, and then I would think about if you can just... Now, are these mulched at all, or do you have any mulch around
them?
Yes,
they are mulched.
With what?
Hardwood bark mulch.
Okay. And then I assume there's nothing like plastic or anything like that underneath the mulch?
They're surrounded by peonies and Virginia creepers and some hostas.
Okay. So all that sounds not necessarily a bad thing. So I'd wonder about the drainage, but then I would think, I would just try and actually you might want to do some shaping to try to, because they are one of those that is meant to be hedged. And so they often will go ahead and produce new growth, and maybe they won't look quite so spindly.
Uh-huh.
But I think, though, beyond that, I'm not sure what else I can tell you along those lines.
Right.
But trimming them, and you can do a pretty hard prune on yews.
Okay.
As long as there's still green growth in there when you trim them, you can do a pretty hard prune, and that might help them to look a lot better.
Okay. Well, thank you
very
much.
Okay, well, good luck.
Very good. On again to Urbana. This is line number one. This is our next caller. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have an Easter lily that just finished its cycle, and I wondered, can you plant those?
Sure. Go for it.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, Easter lilies, we think about them, you know, as potted plants, but they're really, you know, they're lily lilies. They're not gonna bloom again, of course,
right.
But they certainly can bloom for many years to come.
Okay.
And, yeah. Usually you're going to put them about 4 to 6 inches deep. So you are going to have them a little deeper than probably what they are in the pot, I would imagine.
Okay. Great. And then my other question is, I don't know if you have any advice on this, but I have a puppy. And now that he's outside in the backyard, and so are my bigger potted plants, he has a great affinity for them. We've tried the spray. Any ideas at all? Any suggestions?
So he's like chewing on the plants, or?
Chewing and digging, but the chewing's the worst problem. Yeah, anything that's woody. And I've got some rather huge outdoor plants and a banana tree, and,
oh,
and
wow.
Loves the banana tree.
Oh, of course. Wow. I'm not sure I know of anything right offhand. I don't know if you've talked to a veterinarian about any kind of repellents or anything along those lines. So is he actually digging in the pots themselves or just digging in the yard? Or?
No, he's digging in the pots, too.
Okay.
Finding ways to amuse himself.
Oh, of course. He's a puppy. He's a puppy, which is anything with puppies. The reason I mention that is that I've certainly found this helpful for cats and other animals that like to dig, and you might be able to do it in your container okay, is at least on the soil part of it, is actually to use a rock, like a rock mulch or something,
okay.
so it's not as attractive to dig.
Okay.
Now, with a puppy, that may not be, you know, as easier said than done, but sometimes that's enough to sort of keep them from, and maybe you have another part of your yard where actually you could do maybe an area to where he, just to let him dig. I don't know.
Oh, he does.
Oh, he does that too. Okay. I would think sometimes a rock or something, and then maybe talking to a veterinarian if there's kind of an approved repellent or something like that that might at least keep him from doing that, or if there's other ways that you can get them up higher out of his reach. But that's a tough call.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. Others welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Well, I have an email here from someone who has this question. They had some bushes which bloom. They said they're not sure what they are exactly. They say they think that it might possibly be viburnum.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, the issue is that it's shading a hydrangea that they have, and she doesn't want to crowd the hydrangea. So first of all, she wants to know, can she trim back these bushes, whatever they are? Maybe they are viburnum. So she wants to know, well, can she just trim back the offending mystery bush?
And that's fine. Actually, viburnums typically don't need a lot of pruning because we generally like them to just do their own thing. But once it's flowered, because these are typically spring blooming plants, once they're flowered, you certainly could go ahead and prune them. I wouldn't do a heavy prune on viburnums. Typically, there's only a couple of them that I probably would get away with doing a heavy prune. Like the arrowwood viburnum takes a heavy prune really well. The other ones, it's more of a matter of just pruning them down to an area where there's still leaves and nice green growth and stuff. I'm not sure I'd take them clear down the ground. So the answer is yes. I think it'll be just fine, certainly after they've flowered. Not knowing maybe which viburnum it is, I'd probably be a little bit, you know, careful with it and not do a major heavy, like down to the ground type of prune.
Okay. The other question is about the hydrangea. Also, apparently, the hydrangea got some frost damage, as we were discussing earlier. And the person here wants to know, is it all right to trim, or should I just let those dead leaves just fall off?
Yeah, it's really annoying to just let them fall off. I know. That's what I've been looking at it. And they're a little, the one thing I have noticed on hydrangeas is some of them kind of acted like my butterfly bush, and the stems literally died to the ground. And then I had a couple of them where just the buds died, and now they're resprouting on those stems. So what I would do is, especially depending on which hydrangea is, we want some of that old wood. If it's some of the pink and blue ones, you actually need that old wood for them to flower well. So I wouldn't be as apt to sort of chop it down down unless I knew it was like an Annabelle or one of those that bloom on new wood. So I know, a long answer. But at any rate, what I would do is scratch the stem with my thumbnail and see if the stem still seems green. If it does, then I wouldn't, then all I would do is take off the leaves or, you know, the dead leaves just to make it look a little bit better and then wait for them to come out. I would think by now they'd be starting to resprout. If it's one of the Annabelles or one of those, which actually those didn't seem to get nearly hit so hard with frost, then those certainly could actually go through a heavier prune and still bloom for us.
Okay, very good. Well, let's see. We have, I think, another caller here, a couple other callers. Next, we'll talk with somebody in Danville, line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a volunteer white mulberry tree that's probably about 35 years old. I left it there because it did bring a lot of birds to the tree. It overhangs the driveway, and in the last couple of years, it seems that most of the fruits have fallen green to the drive. And I only put up with it because of the birds.
Right.
Is there anything to make those fruits stay on and ripen, or should I just call it a loss now and have it cut down?
Yeah, I think especially this year I noticed a lot of things. And I know you the way you talked, this has happened in previous years.
About 2 years. Or maybe I'm just getting to notice it more.
Right. That darn tree.
And I did, while I was out there, I did see a variety of birds coming to the green fruit, which surprised me. But I just don't know whether the mess is worth the minuscule amount of fruit that seems to be ripe.
Yeah. Well, I did notice this year. I noticed that even on my serviceberry, I think because of that frost, and so we had a lot of the fruit just kind of fell off without actually ripening. So I did notice that a lot. So I think because of this kind of weird weather and stuff that we've had, I could certainly understand that for this year to have that happen. And I know you've invested a lot of time and effort into this particular plant, but I will tell you, this is one of the, it's a white mulberry. So, yeah, this is probably not, I'm assuming this is not the native one.
Well, I think it is. It was a volunteer.
Volunteer.
I know Michael Durr calls it the queen of the garbage can trees or something.
Boy, he has a way with words, doesn't he? He has a way with words. So I will say, there is a native one. The red mulberry is actually native. So,
it's definitely the white, really sweet berries.
Right. So I think the bottom line is I don't think there's anything you can do. I have a feeling it's just a matter of, all the fruit trees to some extent are going to lose some fruit, but to have dramatic drops is probably some environmental thing that's going on that I suspect we don't have any control over whatsoever.
Well, in the past, I have used that Ross root feeder to feed the trees, but I haven't done that in the last few years, and I still have cartridges to do so. I don't know if that would help or not.
Well, it's certainly, the overall health of the tree. Usually those guys don't need a whole lot of help. They usually do pretty darn good on their own. But I don't think that's probably what's affecting I have a feeling what's happening is it's one of those things that either high winds or just depending on what's going on while they have fruit on them that they're dropping them at that point. But usually there's still plenty on there. So I doubt there's anything you can do. As far as the fruit, I think that's an environmental thing that's going on there.
I see. Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Let's see. Let's go to next Robinson, and this would be line number 1. Hello.
Good morning, David and Sandy.
Hi.
I have a trivial question. Yesterday I planted 4 dozen glad bulbs, and it's always been my practice to peel away the dry old sheathing that covers them and forces the new sprouts to work hard to get out of their confinement. I've always seemed to have pretty good luck, but I wonder if I'm doing anything wrong. Perhaps those dry sheaths have some nutriment value that I'm hindering when I plant the bulbs.
I'm sorry.
Any thoughts?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I've never had this question before, so that's great. I think probably that sheath has more to do with when they're kind of in their dormant season. So I have a feeling it's probably more of a protection thing during just typically when they would be growing in their native areas. So I doubt that you're really doing a whole lot, to really hinder them by any means by removing that. So I don't think that's a big issue at all. Whether you have to do that, I don't know. I understand the idea of sort of helping them out and they don't have to work so hard. But they'd probably do it anyway. So it's, I think it's fine. And so I certainly don't think you're hurting anything. That's for sure.
Okay, good. Now I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Living as we do at the extreme edge of reception for WILL-AM, I've been hearing some words that are hints that David and Celeste are going away. Is this true?
Well, Celeste is already gone. She officially retired at the beginning of the month, and yes, I am going to retire at the end of June.
And do we have reason to hope that Sandra will still be a feature?
I unfortunately am not retiring.
Yes, we are. The plan is that this program will outlive me, I hope. In the interim, Craig Cohen, our news director, will be hosting. And then I think the plan is that there will be a permanent host. And that the program, I think the idea is that it should continue essentially as it has. And that a lot of the regular people that show up here, like Sandy, will continue to be on the show. At least that's my understanding is, and I think she said yes, that she would be willing and able and happy to continue to be on the show here once a month. So she will still be a part of the crew, and I think a lot of other of our regular guests will be too.
Well, wonderful. We know that she is willing and able for sure. Now, one final parting assault. I would recommend that anybody who has white mulberry trees should do everything in their power to kill them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Because the seeds are dropped everywhere, and when they sprout within a bed of flowers, they're invisible for a long time, and then they become ineradicable.
Yeah.
Thank you very
much.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, right, thanks. Thank you. And because birds pass them around, of course, they always end up in fence rows. And actually, I've seen them like in among other trees, like evergreens and stuff, because the birds sit there and stuff. And I should say, too, that, David, it will be March of next year. I was trying to get David, I'll tell you all. I was trying to get David to stay a little bit longer because March of next year, I will have been doing this show with him for 20 years.
It still kind of boggles me that,
David.
The show last year was the 30th anniversary of the show, and that there are a handful of folks that have been doing this for that long or longer, which just sort of stuns me. It doesn't really seem like that long. And,
it just won't be the same without you. That's all I got to say. Just won't be the same.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll take some more calls after a short break. This is Focus.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Trophy Time in Champaign. Trophy Time features a variety of advertising items, name badges, plaques, and trophies. They can also design and create unique awards for any occasion. Trophy Time, they're more than just trophies. More information is available at 351-7958.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. We're here weekday mornings 10 until noon, 10 different topics every week. In the second hour today, our guest is Stephen Kotler. He is an award-winning science writer. He is the co-author of a new book that is titled Abundance, and the subtitle of the book, The Future is Better Than You Think. And it really takes on the idea, and certainly we hear it all the time, I'm sure you've heard things like it on this show, that the world is in not very good shape. And he and his co-author really make the argument that, in fact, in many respects, life today is much better than it was maybe 50 years ago, certainly than it was several hundred years ago. And they think that things for the people of the world will continue to get better in part because of technology. And he'll share some of his ideas in the second part of the program. Tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, we'll talk with Stephen Petrozzolo. He is an associate professor in the Department of Kinesiology and Community Health. We'll talk about fitness and exercise. And then also in the second hour tomorrow, the guest is Henry Petrosky. He's a professor of engineering at Duke University, very well known for writing about design. And he has a new book out that's titled To Forgive Design, Understanding Failure. And he'll talk about why sometimes things fail and the role that humans play in that. So that's what we have up for the next day or two. Check the schedule by going to our website. That's WILL.illinois.edu. This morning, we're taking questions on lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. Sandy Mason is here. She's an extension educator with U of I Extension in Champaign, Ford, Iroquois, Vermilion County. She's here on the program once a month, always a Tuesday, to talk about things that grow in the home landscape. And we'll just get back to the phones here, and I have an email we'll get, and we'll take as many calls and emails as we can. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222. 9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. Here's a caller in Charleston, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Good morning.
Hi.
David, you're going to be terribly missed. You and Celeste both have just been great to listen to. Incredible interviewers. But I'm sure with experience, your replacements will pull up the ranks with you.
Sure, 20-30 years.
I was going to say, in 20 years.
Exactly. Sandy, I have a dwarf improved Meyer lemon, and I've always had it in a pot. It's a nice large pot, and I keep it in a south facing window during the winter, and it's out in the outdoors during the summer months. I'm looking at it now. It never seems to hold the lemons. I get buds. I get blossoms. They smell great. And then the little baby lemons just kind of fall off. And I'm wondering what I can do to get this thing to hold on to those.
So is this during the winter? When are you seeing the lemons?
Well, that's another thing. When I do get a lemon or two and they hang on there, it's maybe about once a year that I can actually, you know, get a lemon off it. They take forever to ripen.
Right. Well, yeah, citrus actually takes a long, it's amazing how long they have to stay on the tree before they're actually
produced. Will blossom maybe three times a year.
But then only one of those times you'll get.
Yeah, it just depends on, you know, when they hang on.
Right. So you're pretty comfortable with, as far as watering and those kind of things, that staying moist, so it's not getting too dry and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So pretty comfortable with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I guess I'm wondering about, you know, is there any particular kind of feed I should be doing other than, you know, brand name?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like Schmiracle Schmo.
I don't know. Any idea what you're talking about? Because the reason I wonder, I just mentioned about the watering issue, because certainly if they get too dry, sometimes they'll, either the flower buds or the fruit themselves will fall off. The other thing I'm wondering about is pollination. Because I'm not sure, now you're kind of stretching into an area here. I'm not a huge citrus grower, so we're maybe into an area, and maybe there's callers that are folks that are listening know a bit more about Meyer lemon than I do. But they certainly need to be pollinated.
And that may be the problem.
And so sometimes they will halfway form, and then they'll just fall off because they haven't been pollinated properly.
Okay.
So that's why I was asking, like, when are you seeing them? Are you seeing them when they're outside to the point where they could have gotten pollinated just by the insects that are out there? Or is it at a different time? So that's why I was wondering.
Right. You know, it could very well be that they've been outside, that that's when the lemon is then coming in months later. And then again, when it gets a little bit too cold, it comes inside, and we have ladybugs.
Yeah.
But
not quite as helpful.
Honeybee.
Not quite as helpful. I mean, you could actually try doing a little pollination yourself, just by taking some of the flowers off, and then try to pollinate a few. And you just want to see and look and see. Usually, you can tell when the pollen is actually ripe, because you get that little bit of yellow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can tell that they're ripe, and then just take a few of those off, and then just kind of pollinate a few yourself, and see if that doesn't help. So, and that's what I really wonder, if they're just not getting pollinated.
I do see regularly through the year. This thing sits on a little file cabinet in my office when it's there, and the file top of the file cabinet gets very sticky.
Oh, now that may be a scale, which is an insect.
Oh,
issue, which is not a good thing.
No.
And unfortunately, citrus are kind of prone to that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're getting stickiness on the counter, it's probably scale.
Yeah.
And those are, you know, they'll live on the stems and actually on the backside of the leaves and all that kind of stuff. Well, once you get it outside, you can insecticidal soap is actually pretty good control for that. But you usually have to do several sprays to finally get it under control.
One last question. I'm always hesitant to prune the thing. It's never been very large. It's probably about 5 years, 6 years old now, and I feel I don't want to take off what few leaves there are.
Right. But you're just thinking about shaping it or something? Or?
Well, I don't know if pruning it would make it come back stronger.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Not necessarily. But certainly fertilizing is fine. I'd probably go, I don't know whether you could actually purchase it anywhere around here, because some of the citrus do have some micronutrient deficiencies. So I would really make sure that you get whatever fertilizer you use, make sure it says it has micronutrients in it.
I'll be heading out to California in the summer. I'll
there you
sure
go.
Pick up some.
I'm sure they'll have the perfect thing for
California
you.
California is lousy with Meyer lemon trees.
Yeah, it's probably like mulberries out there, right?
Oh, by the way, I'd add sweet gum to that list.
Oh, that everybody should get rid of.
Gumballs.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay, well,
thank
good luck.
You.
Mm-hmm.
Other questions are certainly welcome here. We'll be here for about another 12 or 14 minutes. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension, and we're taking questions on things that grow in the home landscape. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. You can send us email, will-talk@illinois.edu. And I have an email from someone who wants to know what you know about the flamingo willow tree. She says she saw one for the first time at Country Arbors and was curious about how it might do here. Is it hardy? Should it be planted in an area protected from wind? And apparently they're concerned because they live on the edge of town and it can be windy where they are.
Hmm. I don't know. It must be a particular cultivar, flamingo willow.
I've been looking for Salix integra. Apparently, it's also called Japanese willow, maybe.
Well, there is a willow, and I'm wondering if it isn't just a version of that one that actually has three different colors of leaves, as in all on one leaf, it'll have pink, white, and green. And that's actually one that's been around. It's a Japanese type willow, and I wonder if this just isn't a cultivar
kind of
one of those.
I'm thinking that it might. Yeah. This might be the one that. Yeah,
very
well,
pretty.
We have it here. I'm looking at a website of a plant place, and its thing is it's called the flamingo tree. And it has
the same on that
striking pink and cream variegated foliage. Yes, Hakuro Nishiki.
Yeah. And they decided that Hakuro Nishiki was too hard to say, so they're like all in a flamingo tree.
And is it in fact something that's native to Asia?
It may very well be. I'm not sure on that, to be honest with you.
Says this, an ideal tree for the small garden or even planted in a pot on the patio will grow no taller than its current size, but will thicken right out year to year and provide even better show. And they talk about it being good for, say, a specimen plant, I guess it might be a good thing if you don't have room for a really big tree. I'm just not. And this has the eventual height. This is a British website, so it's the eventual height and spread here. It says it's only 2 meters, so that would be like 6 feet. Right.
Yeah, we actually have one of these out at the Idea Garden, the Master Garden Garden in Urbana.
Okay.
And a couple things. They're very pretty. The foliage is very pretty, but I will say a couple of things. The foliage is much better if they're getting sun. It's just very pretty. If you get a lot of shade, you kind of lose some of that coloring on them. And I'll also tell you is that new growth is where the color is. So if you don't do, like out at the Idea Garden, they actually do a heavy prune every single year. And it's trained into a single standard, a tree. But then they just chop it down to stubs, basically pollarding it every single year. And then it has this wonderful new growth that has that pink and green and white on it. So I think it's a great plant. Hardiness, I don't think you have any problem with it being hardy. I think it is best if it is actually pruned every year so that you have that new growth. It's so much prettier that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it tends to get a little, they might look at it. It's actually on the north side of the Idea Garden, which is on South Lincoln Avenue in Urbana. And just to sort of look at it and see what you think. It gets a little gangly, kind of looking to it. if it isn't pruned. Mm. So I think if someone's willing, it's a specimen tree, they're willing to do a little pruning on it periodically, I think it can be a fun plant to have.
All right. Well, I hope that helps. Other questions are certainly welcome. You want to pick up the telephone and call, you can call 333-9455. We also do have that toll-free line good anywhere that you can hear us, and that's 800-222-9455, and the email will-talk@illinois.edu. Here's another email from someone who says, we have an ornamental tree. It's about 10 feet tall with large numbers of suckers, some of which are growing in and around other plants like hostas. What is your recommendation, if any, of ways to keep the suckers from growing without poisoning the tree itself?
Yeah. It's always a big issue, and there are some plants like crabapples, lindens, there's several of them that just seem to always want to have suckers on them. The thing not to do, as in do not do it, would be any of the non-selective herbicides. I've heard people trying to use like Roundup and glyphosate-type non-selective herbicides. That is not the thing to do because you certainly could kill off the tree. So, okay, we know that. There is some stuff called sucker stopper that if you wanted to try an application of a particular growth regulator is really what it is to keep those suckers from continuing to grow. So there is that product. I think it's a little expensive, but if you only have a couple trees, it's probably fine. You have to really read the label and use it at the size. The suckers need to be at a certain size in order to, as in height. The other thing with suckers is actually to dig down as far as you possibly can. And I realize these are among other plants, so I know it's hard. But if you just take a little time and really dig down and see if you can figure out where they're coming off of, and it's usually off of the roots, if you can actually, and sometimes if they're small enough, you can do this, but if you can actually pull them off instead of cutting them off, a lot of times that actually removes that bud that they're growing from. Because every time you cut, of course, then that bud is still there, and so they're going to continue to grow. So if you can rip them off, that helps. Barring that, once they get to a certain size, you can't really do that. Then dig down and try to cut them off as far as you possibly can, as close to the root as you possibly can on where they're coming from. So it takes a little time, but unfortunately, we don't have some really good answers for suckers.
Okay, very good. Well, again, questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I think I was a little off on my feet and meters. I think, in fact, 2 meters is, what did I say? I think two meters is 6 feet? No,
yeah,
that's right. Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Right.
I was thinking, after I said it, I thought, now, really, is that right? Yes, apparently two meters is a little over 6 feet.
Something like that.
Well, anyway, other questions, comments are welcome. And again, you can call. You can go online, and we'll do our best to take the questions. I was just thinking, as I was looking for something to talk about at one of your recent columns, about the dreaded garlic mustard.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe we could talk about that a little bit. This is one of those things that it's a very invasive plant, spreads really easily. Yeah. And I think it's one of those things, though, that once you know what it is, you realize it's everywhere.
Yeah.
And in and of itself, it's not a bad looking plant if it would just behave itself, but it spreads so easily that really the recommendation is, particularly if it's in woodlands and places like that, you just really want it. You see it, rip it up.
The big issue this year was the fact that because it was so warm, it's a biennial, and typically we would see it blooming the 1st of May. I mean, blooming, blooming and really setting seed. So May has always been kind of the month that we think about garlic mustard. But this year, because it was so warm in March, we started seeing it blooming in late March and certainly into April, to the point now where it's in full seed set. Mm-hmm. Which normally it would never be that far along. So it's sort of just being aware of it. And the fact that it has tiny white flowers on it, but it has a bunch of white flowers. It is in the mustard family. And then one plant can produce just hundreds, if not thousands, of seeds. So one plant. And so why do we care about this? Well, the reason we care about it is the fact that garlic mustard is one of those. It is an exotic. It's not native to our areas. And the problem is it has that. I think a lot of people are familiar with what black walnuts can do, where they actually have this toxin. And and they actually can keep other plants from growing around them. And actually, garlic mustard, it is not the same chemical, but it has the same kind of properties in that it can actually keep other plants from growing around it. So that's not good. We don't want to see that in our garden. We certainly don't want to see that in the woodland where we have all our spring ephemerals and we're wanting to see, you know, all the wonderful flowers that we have that are native out there get totally displaced by garlic mustard. So it's not a good scenario any way you look at it. The big thing is right now it's in seed, in full seed set. And if you just pull it up and then throw it to the ground, well, the seeds will go ahead and ripen. You haven't really done much. Yeah. So this time of year we're in there in full seed like this, you have to actually collect them. So collect the plants. And they're easy to pull. That's the good news. You know, they're easy to pull up. And if you look, go to websites, you can find pictures of them. And they're really, and they do have a garlicky kind of smell to them. So they're usually pretty easy to figure out and pretty easy to identify. So you do have to collect them. As I said, I have kind of a hazmat compost pile where I put all the stuff like that I know. And then I just put them in that pile. And I know that that's the pile where I'm putting things like quackgrass and bindweed and all the stuff. That's my hazmat pile. And I know that that's the compost pile that I really need to watch closely to see what's coming out of it, how I use it, where I put it, you know, once it does decompose, to do all those kind of things. I have had some people tell me they put garlic mustard actually in black plastic bags and then just leave it in there. And then that seems to, they seem to decompose enough to the point where then they're not, the seeds aren't viable. But it's really, really a tough one. And we never saw it in the backyards. For the longest time, they were just in woodlands. And now I see it in like everybody's backyard. And they love woodland areas, you know. So if you have a shady backyard, and I think Urbana's been ripe for that with the bigger trees and a lot of shade. And so take care of it now so you don't have a problem with it later.
Yeah, and see, what I have done, I guess I have followed your advice to be careful with it. And when I pull it out, what I have done is just stuck it into a trash bag. But the problem there is that you end up with this nasty, slimy mess when it decomposes. Then what do you do with it?
Right,
now, I suppose you could then, dump that. Once it's really to that point, you can dump it out, I guess.
Right.
But you really, you're not supposed to put stuff like that into the trash.
Right, right.
Yard waste, you're not supposed to put
in
the trash. So then you're, you're stuck to do this slimy bag of stuff.
I know, hazmat. That's what I said. Yeah, hazmat compost.
All right. A couple of other callers here. We'll get them in. I think we should be able to in the time we have left. Line one. Champagne. Hello.
Yes, hi. I just had a question. I have a rhododendron that we transplanted last year, and I think it's way too close to the house, and it seems to be struggling. But I saw that it actually did bloom a little bit this year. And talking to the friend that gave it to us, and he said that one should never, not transplant it at this time, and that one should not prune anything, any kind of plant, except in a month where there's an R. Is that?
Oh, I never heard of that.
Yeah, I had never heard that. And I had noticed I'd been planning to prune a couple of things a little further that we had pruned last summer, and one of the trees is a little dogwood, and it looks kind of sick. And that's why I was planning to prune some of its branches, but he said, you know, not to prune unless there's an R in the current month.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I necessarily, I guess that's one rule of thumb, but I'm not sure I'd necessarily go with it, to be honest with you. So are you wanting to move the rhododendron, or are you wanting to prune the rhododendron, or both?
Well, probably both.
Okay.
But I think it's really close to the house, and he said that the rhododendron, to leave it where it is, it will kind of grow around the corner of the house, and that the rhododendrons just simply adjust.
Well, it's just whether you want it that close. They're not the easiest things in the world to keep pruned and still have flowers, especially in our area, because it's not really, you know, the soils aren't acidic enough. It's really not ideal for rhododendrons around here. So I guess I would be more inclined, to be honest with you. And when did you move this last year, you said?
Yes, about early September, I believe.
Okay. Personally, I think I would go ahead and move it.
Ah, okay.
I wouldn't wait much later than this. But ideally, probably should have been done in April, March or April.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting kind of that point. You could actually wait, maybe, you know, let it recover a little bit and then maybe move it next spring. But I guess I'm more inclined to say, you know, you've already, you know, to this point, cut roots and whatever. So I would just move it to where you want it and then make really watch it. I wouldn't do any pruning on it.
If you do
go ahead and move it, because we always have to think about any kind of pruning, you're removing food reserves.
So
you don't want to do that on a plant that's really struggling. And that would be the same thought with the dogwood, too. You certainly could prune dogwoods now, but I would be more inclined, if one isn't doing well, cut off anything that's obviously dead, but leave everything else on there if you can.
Okay, and then just wait till fall for the dogwood. And other things, too.
As far as pruning?
Yeah.
Well, no. You don't want to do that because, you know, dogwoods, you're talking about the tree, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You know, they'll produce their buds the year before. So you'd never want to do any fall trimming or
Okay.
And that's why I don't really agree with his R month because,
Okay.
you know, anything that's spring blooming is putting on its buds the year before, its flower buds. So if you want to do some light pruning now, I think that's fine. You generally, for those spring bloomers, we do it right after they bloom.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Great.
Okay.
And the same would work for a big lilac tree.
Correct.
I assume.
Yep.
All right.
You're absolutely right.
Okay. I will try, if we can do line two, if you can be real quick, we'll try to get you. Go ahead. Champagne, line two.
Yes. Like a diatribe on garlic mustard, but there's another crucifer, which is Dame's Rocket, which is out on the prairie
right.
at the present time. It's on our railroad beds, probably because people... improved the prairie by throwing it out the end of the train as it went through. So it's very prominent at the moment and rather beautiful, and people mistake it for a prairie
right.
plant.
Right.
But thank you. You
yeah. Thanks.
Time.
Okay. Well, that's it. You know, again, there's a lot of these things there in the environment. They're very invasive, and it's good just to kind of, if you can, know your plants, and if you have stuff that shouldn't be there. Just get rid of it.
Yeah, and I think that's one of those things. It's just sort of educating yourself. And the nice thing is there's great information out there on the web where you can find about just invasive plants, and there's lots of good info and lots of great pictures you can find out. And like this Dame's Rocket is one that's beautiful. It's, I mean, you know, you'd love it. It's pink. But it really is one of those that's an invasive, even though it's pretty and we think it's pretty and all that kind of stuff. It really is one of those things that someone always said it's ecologically ugly.
All right.
Maybe pretty, but... not so much.
Our guest, Sandy Mason, is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension. She's here once a month, always on Tuesday. She'll be back again next month. We'll do it one
Absolutely.
More time. Thank you very
All right.
much.
Thank you.